Hello and welcome to the Business Growth Show.
I'm Adam from Active Internet Marketing.
And I'm John from Octopus Computers.
And we're going to be hosting this podcast regularly, particularly appealing to businesses in the Stamford and Rutland area. We're going to have lots of exciting guests where we can start to hear about their career journeys and how they've got to the place that they are now. And hopefully there'll be lots of advice and beneficial information for people.
So if you want to stay up to date with everything that's going on, drop us a like and a follow and stay in touch. Today, I'm really excited. We get to interview Joe from The Blonde Beat in Stamford. And I've been desperate to get you on here because I have so many questions about basically the journey and how many different ways you found of innovating and building people in, which I'm sure we'll get into. But to start, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and The Blonde Beat?
Yes, I'll do The Blonde Beat easiest first, probably. Shorter story anyway, isn't it? So I run The Blonde Beat, which is Stamford's only plant-based cafe, restaurant, bistro, community space. We've been running it for about 4 years in the premises, and we were doing a year of sort of takeaways from home during lockdown before that, which we can chat about. It is essentially a relatively small cafe space that we also open on a Friday evening. A short kind of almost like plat du jour type menu, which was always kind of my plan was to keep knocking that thing.
That's
I'm flailing. I kind of always wanted to have sort of sustainability, particularly at the heart of everything that we do, at least all the decision making that we do. It can't always be lived, but it's considered at every point, I guess. And so part of that is making sure that it's a small curated menu. So we haven't got lots of waste. We're not trying to do absolutely everything. But really importantly for us, the kind of ethos of the space, I guess, is that anybody's welcome. You don't have to wear sandals and eat lentils every day to come in. I do both of those things, but we don't profess it on the outside. I'd say sort of 80, 90% of our customers aren't vegetarian or vegan.
Right.
Which is exactly where we wanted to be, I think, to kind of create a space that I really wanted to have in Stamford. I got frustrated with the lack of kind of interesting veggie and vegan options. I know that that food is good and it's delicious and it can be really tasty, and that a lot of people are scared of it and don't know how to do it and don't know how to eat it and don't know what to expect. So to create a space where anybody's welcome, yeah, and hopefully the food and the space speak for themselves, and it just so happens that you haven't had meat or dairy in your meal. Mm-hmm. It makes me happy when people leave having not necessarily realised that, they're really enthused about what they've had.
And yeah. About you personally, you live in Stamford?
Yeah, so I've lived in Stamford since 2008 and just sort of stumbled across here. I did not know where Rutland was, and I got a job at a charity in Oakham. And here I have stayed. Which is convenient because I wouldn't want to live further away having to and fro to a business 7 days a week. Really, really sort of feel part of that community now. And I guess part of that is we've sort of created a space and they will come. So a lot of my kind of community has sort of found me in a way. And I guess that was also part of it for me was I'd always been involved in kind of sustainability type things in town, but felt very much like, which feels quite funny now, the token young person. I'm less young than I was. But I sort of knew that there must be people out there that were interested in a lot of the same sort of stuff. And yeah, it really does feel like now a lot of people kind of find us and root us out and come and have their meetings there and conversations. I really go off on many tangents. You've asked me if I live in Stamford.
No, this is what I want. Don't worry.
Yeah, okay. No, absolutely. It's perfect.
From an interest in sustainability to running your own bistro with premises and stuff is quite a jump.
Yes.
What made you make that decision, or did it just happen?
No. So I've always had an interest in sustainability. I was probably indoctrinated into that fairly young. My dad's an environmental scientist and ran outdoor education centres and things. So whether we wanted to go on walks and learn about warblers and great crested newts, we were doing it anyway. And that kind of seeped in. So I had a sort of 10, 12 career 12-year career in sustainability and working with students, particularly across the UK and internationally, on getting them to take up new habits and behaviours. So a lot around behaviour change and engagement. And through that, which I loved most of the time, I kind of really understood the power of food in that conversation. You know, a lot of times, I mean, it's probably not rocket science thing that you put food on and students will come. But what that food was, but often then had an impact on what the conversation was when you were running training sessions around switching lights off and putting things in recycling bins. And so you could kind of see on a day-to-day basis the impact that that was having, but also the kind of annoyance of how difficult it was sometimes in big institutions to get more sustainable options in way, by the way, of food, how it was packaged, what was in it. And so the kind of idea was bubbling in my brain. I did a master's in international development and education. And a friend that I had there, we kind of just got very excited by coffee shops and food and cakes and anything to put off writing a thesis. And it just sort of came into my head that I'd really love to run a space that I would like to see that normalised kind of veggie and vegan food, that had a really nice feel to it, where people kind of sit and work, because that's what we were doing a lot of the time when we were studying, kind of cruising around coffee shops and things. So it just kind of sat there for a while. And I guess I've always had an interest in community. My parents say we've all got an overactive community thyroid that just kind of must get involved in many things. And so that also, for me, I kind of really wanted there to be a space that wasn't a church hall and wasn't a community centre where anybody could come and kind of utilise it. So all of these things are sort of bubbling along in the background. And I guess over sort of 10, 12 years of a lot of travelling around the country for work, a lot of working really hard for other people, not necessarily seeing the outcome, because we were training people, so you didn't necessarily see whether that actually had the influence that you wanted it to have. With a lot of passion for sustainability and always saying yes and jumping to do more, but not always feeling the reward. The opportunity came up with a restructure at NUS that I could potentially take voluntary redundancy.
Right.
And so I said I would like to. The more I thought about it, the less I wanted to stay. And thought that it might finally be the opportunity to give something a go. That was beautifully timed at sort of October 2019.
Oh, lovely. Great time to get to hospitality.
Yeah, exactly. though actually, I think it was really fortuitous for us, because I'm not a super brave person. I like to get my ducks in a row before I commit to things. So actually, it kind of gave me an amazing opportunity. So I could use some of that redundancy money to go on a 2-week diploma course in vegan cookery that I'd been interested in for ages, because I suddenly had the time and a pot of money. So I went and did that. And then through that, I had really nice conversations with other people who were at a similar sort of stage looking to set something up. And it just kind of made me realize I didn't necessarily have to go all in straight away. So we decided to do some supper clubs from home, because that exists in cities and many spaces, but not necessarily in sleepy Stanford. So we thought we'd give that a go. So I tried it out on a couple of friends first, of varying kind of meat and veg persuasions, so that I could understand whether actually the food that I was cooking was going to appeal to the broad audience. And I think we then only did sort of 2 or 3 of those before lockdown happened. But it was an amazing chance to just dip my toe in the water without being super public about anything and see how it felt. It felt a bit weird to have 6 other people in my house while we were cooking for them and how clean it had to be every time. So I sort of knew that wasn't where I necessarily wanted to end up, but it was an amazing chance to kind of get a feel for it. And again, have that conversation around the table, which to me was really important about kind of what's come with us now into the business of
just community
chatting about food. Yeah.
Brilliant. And with your menu, do you have staple items that are continuously available, or do you have lots of different offerings coming out all the time, or how do you work with that?
Yeah, so we have a monthly menu. So seasonality is super important to us. Obviously, there are some things that you can't get away from. You always need to have onions and lemons and garlic and things. But to really be able to showcase the joy of particularly sort of local, but also just British seasonal vegetables is really important to us. Yeah. And the kind of message that we're peddling, particularly somewhere like Lincolnshire, where so much of it is available. relatively speaking, on our doorstep. So we change it every month. So it's a new menu starting next month. And don't ask me what it is yet, but we're almost there. And so there are always some items that are same. So we've got a couple of brunch menu items that always remain the same. We just change them up every year or so if we feel like we're getting bored with them or if we feel like customers are getting bored with them. And it's always the same sort of setup. So we always have two sort of big main dishes, a pie or a tart, an open sandwich, an array of salads, so that, again, we can kind of just keep changing things on a daily basis and on salads and things and see what comes in. And yeah, a counter of cakes, and we play with desserts for a Friday night, that sort of thing.
We definitely recommend the food. It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. No, really, really infused to come in here, give it a try, also try something very different for me personally.
Yeah, well, biased being vegan. I was fed up with eating stuffed peppers and cooked stuff.
Anyway,
or falafel. God, I'm tired of falafel.
Yes. We do put it on every now and again.
Well, I mean, it has its place, but it is that sort of, as a vegan, it's everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's some things like that, like tofu, falafel, hummus, that I kind of really steered away from at the beginning because I felt like that. Like, I was really bored of finding those things everywhere. But because we have to speak to a broader audience than, you know, the vegan population of Stanford would not sustain us.
Right.
So it needs to speak to everybody. And actually, for a lot of people, that sort of food is quite familiar, and it might feel different enough, but it still feels familiar enough that it kind of brings people in. I guess that's sort of what we've learned along the way, really, is kind of how to balance those things. And actually, it took me a good probably a year and a half to put tofu on the menu as tofu. But by then, I think people kind of bought into what it was that we were doing, kind of trusted the food and the process. And if it came with enough other nice things, you know, it's fried in sesame seeds and it's stirred with a Thai curry sauce and it's got noodles.
It never feels like it's missing something from the plate. I was a vegan, and
yes,
I'm married vegan now.
Yeah.
So it's very much gone that way. But you are conditioned, I think, to think that every plate should be meat to veg.
Yeah.
I agree. No matter what cuisine it is. Mm. And it never feels going to be yours that there's something not on there.
No. I think for us, like the things that I guess sort of intuitively learned, partly through some of those courses back in the day, but just through sort of playing and practicing and kind of what feels like it's missing is the kind of the texture element is quite often what's missing. If people made a vegan dish at home, and we do at home, you know, a lot of curries or dals or chilies or bolognese's, then they're all just soft. And what you're lacking then from a crunchy bit of chicken or a chewy bit of something, is really important. So the texture element. So we use a lot of toasted nuts, toasted seeds. They add a real sort of umami flavor as well that you wouldn't necessarily expect and you wouldn't necessarily think to do. But as soon as you do that, it kind of really changes a dish. Color as well, really important. And that's where the amazingness of seasonality really comes in, and we can kind of really play to that. So every time we're kind of thinking of our dishes for the month, I really try and think of if they were all on a table together, what would it look like, and particularly different color pots on a plate, which every chef must think about. But I just think you sort of have to almost upsell it and kind of really let people eat with their eyes so that when something arrives at the table, you get, I wasn't expecting that, or that looks a bit more interesting.
So from the jump from doing these supper evenings to effectively having your own hospitality menu is a big one.
Yeah.
And actually, hospitality is quite a scary sector for people to get into.
Yeah.
How did you find a premises? Why did you choose that premises is my main question.
How
did you end up? It's a lovely place, but the footfall, I would say, is probably a bit low. So you've obviously made it a destination. It's like six questions here and one.
Have fun.
How did you find it, choose it, and go in?
So I guess I'll quickly, the first thing to say is when lockdown happened, we started doing takeaways from home because I'd had a couple of supper clubs. I knew that there was an interest from people that were just our friends and family. And obviously takeaway was the thing at the time. I was working part-time, and obviously my husband was also working from home. So on a Friday and Saturday nights, we did takeaways. He did all the deliveries.
I loved that.
I did all the deliveries. I know.
It's such fantastic food that was prepared, and you take it home. I was a big fan of that.
And it was amazing. I mean, our understanding of Stanford, Rutland and the surrounding areas is now second to none.
Yeah.
But it was a bit of a logistical feat, but it was good fun, and it was really good practice. And it meant that come December 2020, we knew that we had 300 customers on our books who were interested, and most of which were repeat customers, and were kind of asking what next. So I guess we got to the point where I was like, if I don't do anything, will I be really pissed off if somebody else swoops in and does this?
Yeah.
Which was essentially where I got to. So it was a fear, FOMO, fear of missing out, really, and fear of somebody else doing it and not doing it in the way that I wanted to do it. And then it would be harder for us to come into the sector when there was already a something else there. So we sort of started looking. And I got in contact with Annabelle, actually, from All Good Market, who was looking to set up a refill shop. I just saw online that she was interested in that and was doing some surveys. So we spoke to each other online. We didn't know each other at all. And we actually had the conversations as to whether it would be sensible for us to get a space together because we were both starting out. Neither of us knew what to do. And we thought it'd be lovely to have a refill shop with a cafe.
It spreads the risk as well.
Exactly. Yeah. But it also doubles the risk if you don't know each other.
Yeah.
And she was much more ready than I was, I think, and had done her research and things. So she actually just sort of went ahead and did it. And then when I was looking for premises, she said, actually, there's a space behind that might be really nice. So we had to look at one space, and that wasn't quite right. And then the landlady said, actually, there's a space upstairs that might actually be quite a nice little restaurant. And it had been a like massage space and a beauty therapy space for years. And it has, yes, it is an interesting space, but partly because Annabelle was there, partly because Leonie was just setting up for Stanford Botanics. It just felt really nice at the same time. So three women new to business, changing career directions, all in something that's sort of linked together in this lovely little part, this beautiful nook of Stanford, just felt quite protected and quite a nice opportunity to collaborate. Even though you have to go through a space that you probably, you would have to duck to get into the corridor.
I've ducked to get into the
Central Park. I've not ducked before, but I've seen the consequences. Through a corridor, through a courtyard, in through a door. We've got a tiny little space downstairs, which is our kind of coffee shop bit, with nowhere to sit. And then you have to go upstairs into the eaves, which is also where our kitchen is, which means it's blooming hot, with only one opening window. But it is a beautiful space.
It's a very Stanford as well.
It is very Stanford. Yeah. You know, you think about it's Toby Norris vibes of a beautiful building, but nobody knows it's there. We had to do quite a lot to it. So we spent, you know, 4 months lightly renovating, but, you know, taking out partition walls and making the beams look beautiful again, all within the bounds of, you know, listed building joys. Mm. Creating a kitchen out of the bits of stud wall that came down. My husband then fashioned a kitchen out of it. Working out how to run a coffee shop. And I guess that kind of fear of not having all the ducks in a row, at one point he was just like, we just need to open downstairs and outside, and we can finish upstairs over the next month, but we need to figure out how this works.
Through doing this podcast, we definitely see a reoccurring theme with people with that. Nobody we speak to is ever at a point where they feel completely organized and ready and comfortable. Yeah. And you have to take that leap. So amazing you did that.
And again, it probably made it, I think it was really sensible with hindsight. You know, we had 14 seats outside, so we could only open to 14 people to start off with. We did a soft launch, so I just messaged our customers to just say, by the way, we're opening this week.
Yeah.
I'm not telling anybody about it. So come along.
Don't tell your friends.
Don't tell people of your friends. Won't come and show us some love. And then over the next few weeks, you know, we could then finish the upstairs, and then we could open upstairs.
Brilliant.
And once we actually knew how tills worked and how to make coffees and things. And actually, one of our first members of staff came about because she came in and asked for an iced latte on day one, and I was like, sure, do you want to tell me how to make that? And she did, and then she came back in and she was like, just wondering, would you need any staff?
Yeah.
Quite obviously we do. So then she worked for us in summer and things.
Amazing.
And
having gone through all of that and this kind of journey and going from the original start we described right to where you are now, what is it that you enjoy most about it all currently?
It's so much is the community and the chat. And if I'm having a really crappy couple of weeks, and this last month probably hasn't been a particularly upbeat one for me personally, you know, you're having a bit of a rubbish day, and then you walk through a cafe that's full, which doesn't happen all the time, but when it's full, and you walk past and you know pretty much everybody on a table and somebody says what a delicious plate of food that was, somebody asks you how you do that, somebody else said, oh, can we have a book club here so that we can meet next week, it would be a lovely space for that, and all of a sudden within a half an hour period you can kind of see what you've created, people who are thrilled about the food and excited by that and interested and can kind of take some of that home and try it, and we have quite a lot of people that say they've try more food at home now that's more plant-based because they've seen what might be possible. And just creating that space where people feel really comfortable to come and use it to work or to have creative writing groups or to kind of have a book club or to run a workshop in an evening is just amazing. And it's exactly kind of
I would say it's quite unique as well. If I look at the other spaces, certainly in Stafford, even the greater Stafford area, there aren't many which work as almost a hub for events or these sorts of groups that come together that I know of. How did you get that to happen?
Yeah.
Because no one's knocking on the door of Starbucks saying, can we do the same for obvious reasons? But
So I think part of it was because of that community aspect to me. I knew I'd been part of groups where you have to sit in cold halls or whatever. So I kind of could put it out to a small network that I already had that I thought might be interested in doing that. Some of it was partly survival. It was realizing that weekday mornings were quite quiet for us. You know, we're not on the high street. We're not open early enough to get the school footfall. People don't just stumble across us often. So we kind of have to work for it. And I just sort of thought, we've got a beautiful space that's lovely and quiet. I'm sure there's people that might want to come and sit and use a table for six in the morning. And we don't have to charge them for it because we're here anyway. And so that sort of model actually worked really, really well. And we've had a fairly, and you know, it's ebbed and flowed, but we've had a really consistent kind of bunch of people that want to use it for that. So some of it on that small scale was part of that kind of just business thinking of how do we get people in at this time of day. But then, yeah, we've worked quite hard at other things, you know, having different artwork on the walls every month. Was partly so that I got different artwork on the walls every month that made it look interesting and fresh. But actually that has kind of snowballed and now we have a waiting list of people that want to put art on the walls, and quite often they want to run an open evening when they start or a workshop to show people how to do it. So a variety of things were kind of quite intentional, and other things have just kind of bubbled along, and you know, once people come in for something, then they see the space and we then definitely see them come back at other times. You know, Leonie runs terrarium making workshops at ours and her shop is literally next door, and I've been there at those events and people have never been down the corridor to our cafe, but they come in and they're like, what, you know, it's a vaulted beam ceiling, it's beautiful. And then I've literally seen them come in the next day with a different friend to have coffee. So it doesn't always make sense financially for those particular events. It's got to make some sort of sense, but it isn't always super lucrative. But we know that the trickle down, and particularly for us this last year where I was off for quite a bit of time having a baby, we didn't do a lot of that because I wasn't around to be able to do that. And we saw quite a big difference in our footfall last year.
Interesting.
And I think now sort of picking it back up, I think we're already starting to see that there is a lot of interest in using the space for that.
You've kind of evolved the idea and innovated so much in your journey, it sounds like, then, from the original concept and the way it's developed and to where you are now. Is there anything new or different that you're going to be evolving into next or launching something additional, do you think?
I mean, there's still, as you know, like there's always more that you can do, which is the frustrating part of 10 o'clock at night. I should also have done this, and I'm trying to actually have half of a bank holiday Monday off and coming in on a Tuesday and realizing that because you did that you've now got a lot of crap to try and sort out because you didn't do it. I think there's still aspirations. We get asked probably every day if there's going to be a cookery book. Part of my problem is I'm very good at creating the food. I'm not very good at writing it down. So that is actually quite a traumatic process for me, probably. We've run cookery schools and classes, which have always also been really popular. And at the moment, I've been kind of thrown back into being in the kitchen full time. So I'm reluctant to add on too many extra bits again at the moment. But that is definitely something that we would love to continue to do and do more of. And alongside that, I'm having to write recipes down. So maybe one day we'll get a book out of it. And for us, kind of things that we played with a lot a few years ago, sort of running supper clubs and things, partly in conjunction with other people, but also just on our own. So kind of seasonal supper club where we get everybody around one table. They don't know what the menu is, but we just provide a beautiful spread of food and then can talk about where it's from, how we made it, give people recipe ideas. It's just something that has been there from the beginning and I'd love to be doing again.
And it's the social element and the community of that side of what you just described, I think it's so important for people nowadays, you know, particularly in Stanford, where generally people are very open and it is a warm community, but so many people work from home as well, and they can be quite isolated. So you're providing so much on top of the food as well to the people there.
Yeah, definitely. And it's what makes me tick, you know. I've often thought at dark moments of, you know, what if we didn't do this?
Why am I still doing this?
Yeah. What if we didn't do this? And that to me is just, you know, could I go and cook for somebody else? But I love the creativity of what we do with the food, but so much of it for me is being a chef who is then out there talking to people and speaking to people, which is annoying because it's very difficult to then find somebody else who can do that for me also.
Yeah. it's a great business success story though, because I think a lot of people in your position would have basically stayed in the kitchen from the B perspective, have just gone, I'm the chef now, this is what I do, and I hope the rest comes through, as opposed to saying, actually, let's engage with community, let's bring in the artwork, let's effectively conduct 100 different marketing activities at the same time.
All at the same time, yeah. I mean, it's a wonderful and like quite a special and different thing. And I've had Kat, one of my most longstanding staff members, said she'd love it if she went somewhere else and the chef gave her food and then chatted to her about it. The problem is, I guess, from a business perspective, is that's difficult to then replicate myself. Mm. And for me to be, like today, and I was late coming today because I was chefing and then suddenly realised I had to be businessing. And then I need to go back to chefing again. And it's hard to replicate. And I think, therefore it's difficult for me to be able to step away and still do it effectively and for the business to feel like the business feels, because whoever steps into my shoes in the kitchen ideally needs to be able to do some of that as well, and to be able to create that family conversational community feel, or I need to be available to come in and do that as well. So it's kind of navigating that new future now.
Yeah,
there's not just a business baby but an actual baby.
I mean, your scenario is pretty unique, I think, but then it is a common problem, I think, for a lot of business owners as well, that whichever industry they're in or area they're in, they find it really hard to either replicate themselves and their own skill or find somebody that's capable and trusted
to get involved.
And to decide which bits you can give to other people that still makes sense and doesn't compromise.
We're also in magpies, right? So there's always the new shining idea. That's definitely where I'm going to spend the next 8 hours.
Yeah. And I guess probably particularly in hospitality, where people come, you know, we have a lot of very loyal customers, and that, again, there probably isn't a day that goes by like we don't give you unsolicited business advice in a very lovely
positive.
We would love to see this sort of a way. And it's very hard not to just let that then sit at the back and be like, yes, why aren't we selling our hummus in tubs for people?
Well, stop asking about cookbooks. Yeah. What if someone came to you and said, look, I want to do something similar, what skills would you look for? What would you recommend to other people looking to get into it?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I was going to say a bit of learning to say no and having some parameters around things, because I think part of our challenge is that we did carefully probably, but did everything. And like I say, you know, I'm now the person that still does everything, and I had brief respite for a year of that, but it had positives and negatives to it. So I think it's tricky because you sort of need to be that person, don't you, to kind of get up and do it every day. I guess the things that I would think about is that kind of balance of who does what and how you can collaborate with people to try and get the stuff done without it all having to be on your shoulders. I think probably just being a bit brave, being probably a good chatter and a bit gregarious probably is a huge part of what we've done.
Taking the risk again comes back as the number one.
Just being really true to being true to our roots, I think, has been really fundamental the whole time. And, you know, we haven't had loads of people come to us ask for different things, but if somebody asks us to do something that just doesn't sit right, then I won't do it. You know, we're pushed enough as it is. So I'm very inclined to say yes to too many people, but there are definitely parameters to that. You know, if people wanted us to cater a huge, big event that had absolutely nothing to do with, had no interest in the kind of sustainability element of what we're doing, and was just because we might be the last person that they could find to do it, then I would obviously weigh up all of the pros and cons of that. And often that for me is something that I wouldn't want to be doing. And I think that's been really important to us. And there's been compromises on the way, you know. I'm trying to think of some of them. You know, we're really careful about what milks we use down in the cafe that in people's coffees. So we buy organic soya so that it's kinder to the environment. We won't serve almond milk. But no, we do use almonds in the kitchen for things. And every now and again, I think, well, that's quite interesting. Like, why do I say one, yes to that, but not the other? But I guess some of that is the conversation that you can have with people. You know, if people ask for almond milk, we say, oh, actually, it's pretty bad at the moment for the environment and difficult for us to ensure that it would be really good. Whereas actually where we buy our nuts from is a fairly trusted source. So it's partly about the conversation you can have. But there's had to be compromises. But I think the fact that we compost all of our waste where we can, we take all of our blooming cans to recycling bins for community projects, and all of our soft plastics to Morrison's to hopefully for them to recycle, we assume they do. You know, all of those sorts of bits that are just what we do at home, so we decided should be part of the business. But I think they're just really important to us. And when we look at kind of how we can make savings or think about compromises going forward in this current climate, we've just got to be really careful not to start eroding some of those really fundamental things that, you know, our nuts probably do cost us more than they might to somebody else. But
there's a reason.
There is a reason. And it's about being careful about how we make those choices so that we don't erode who we are and what we do, and so that it's disingenuous.
The combination of everything you offer, though, including the energy of the way you put it across, I think that's always going to be something that people will want to explore more, want to come along. So
to do it with like a value-driven mission as well is incredible. It's such a great story.
When you ask about, you know, I'm not a business person. Like, I never really wanted to own a business or
don't want to ruin it for you, but I think you are.
I have a very useful husband who is a very good at spreadsheets and VAT returns, and he doesn't enjoy it, but is very good at it. And I would not be trusted to run the business if I had to do all of it, for sure. That is not my skill set. So very lucky that between us, we can tag team the important bits to kind of keep it going. But the business bit itself doesn't thrill me. And again, this last year where I was mainly not in the kitchen and mainly doing that, I found really tough because that doesn't float my boat. So it has to have that value-driven aspect to me to make it worth it. Cooking's great, but like, it needs to be for something.
What about any particular highlight over the last 4 years of doing it? If there was one, I'm sure there's more.
It's really hard not to just kind of see it as like the feeling of when it's really positive. We've had some wonderful staff members come through who've really built in confidence and have been quite often customers that really wanted to come and work and were quite young and inexperienced. And I feel quite a lot of maternal joy when I see them going off and doing other things. Obviously, we're not the sole part of that, but an important part of their journey, which makes me really happy. All of that sort of community aspect of bringing different people in and sharing what is a beautiful space with a lot of value-driven businesses as well is amazing. We won a bunch of awards over the years. But again, you sort of have to go looking for those sometimes, be able to feel confident in what you're offering to show people that you're doing something that you think is worth chatting about. That's really nice to get a kind of local recognition for doing something a bit different and trying to stick to that.
Brilliant. And hopefully from this, we'll be able to really promote it and introduce a lot of new people to you as well. I can already think of several people that I think once that they're aware of everything you do in the variety within it, they'll be in a rush to come along. So hopefully we can introduce a lot more people to it as well.
Yeah.
And then finally, is there anything new or anything else coming soon that you want to mention, or just all the great things that you've told us about.
Yeah, I mean, I say, I think I'm just getting back to the point now of looking for other people to collaborate with and other events to put on. And say, supper clubs of our own would be wonderful. We've got a couple of events coming up of local nutritionists just sort of starting their journey, wanting to run collaborative sort of workshops with food and showing people how to use that food after they've learned about the nutrition and then, et cetera. So starting to have a play with some of those bits and bobs again. And hopefully just sort of still doing more of the same. So hoping to help more people use the space to do co-working sessions through people like Jess and the Fierce Women Network that have been a huge part of our journey as well. And just sort of see where we can go with it. I mean, I would always love more time, obviously, for everything, but more time to be able to develop more interesting parts to the food and to the menu and things. But I think you've kind of got to pick your areas of development and that. And, you know, we're doing catering a few weddings this summer and events things. So you sort of get the opportunity to have a dabble in some of those things and kind of see how it all fits together.
Other than popping in for a coffee, where can people find out a bit more?
Yes. So Instagram and Facebook are probably our most up-to-date. We have a beautiful website, courtesy of my husband, as well. We are on St. Paul's Street, so just before, between Domino's and the Toby Norris. And we're down a little alleyway, which, yes, means that it's sometimes a bit harder to find us, but it means we have a wonderful customer base who know where we are and come avidly. Instagram and Facebook are probably the easiest things, and we're quite conversational on there. We always answer questions as well.
Sure, that's great. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for watching today's episode. I hope you really enjoyed listening to our guest and us waffle our way through a fun conversation.
If you'd like to appear as a guest on the Business Growth Show, then do send us a message on LinkedIn and we'll come back to you and get it scheduled.
Also, please remember to give us a like, a rate and a review. Hit subscribe. Do anything that your social media platform, wherever you're listening, tells you to do to tell everyone we're great.